Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Over 100 years, Gillette has stood with men through early mornings, late evenings and everything in between. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Greg Allen has joined Gary and I in studio. You're welcome, Greg, as always.
Thank you, Hugh.
What a win that was.
That's great, yeah. Well, the man here had a box seat, you know.
Yeah,
so what can I say? My box seat was on my couch for 4.5 hours on Sunday morning, and I wouldn't swap it because it was brilliant.
But I was following you on Twitter. Yeah. That was because I was actually travelling at the time,
I couldn't see.
And I was like, come on, Greg, keep me posted. And then he would go for like 10 minutes without tweeting. I'm like, for God's sake.
I tweeted everything that I thought was significant. I didn't tweet every single shot.
I had my fingers crossed from so much last week, and I mentioned this to you, like, you know, last week we got a kind of text and saying, oh, you didn't go mad when he shot 62 in the opening round, but there have been a few false dawns as far as Shane's concerned in terms of bursting into blocks in a tournament where it then has levelled off and he hasn't quite got over the line, and particularly last season. And I didn't want this to be another one of those. And how hard is it to go out and shoot that 62, have the target on your back, and over the 4 days, the mental strain, the physical toll that it takes, that you're the guy everyone has to beat over 4 days?
Well, I thought the most impressive thing that he did, or among the most impressive things he did, was come back after bogeying two of the first three holes of round two to shoot around a 70. I think he covered the back nine in 32. It could easily have been a 74 when you start off with two drop shots in the first three holes and you realise that the magic of the day before isn't there. But he knuckled down and grounded out, and this was to be the trademark of what he did. The third round, 67, was really good. It was a joint best round of the day. But we all know what really was the most impressive thing of all, which was seeing his lead of three shots evaporate after three holes, seeing himself four behind after 11. And then suddenly, you know, at that point, Richard Stearney was now the pursued rather than the pursuer. Changes the psyche completely in terms of how you go about your business. Mm. And Stearney obviously stalled. And just enough of a chink of light with his par three brilliance of the week, the birdie on 12, followed by the 20-footer on 13. And suddenly he was back in it. And it just took a sniff. But
it was there was the good story about that birdie on 12, because, which he said in the hospitality afterwards, Bo got him to hit that putt in practice on the Tuesday, because it was a Wednesday start, and he saw the putt being right to left, and it's actually a left to right putt, so that putt on 12. So
his initial read of that exact putt was the opposite of how it actually broke.
It looks the other way. It looks right to left, but it goes left to right. So that was, you know, just good homework, and that's where a good caddy can make the difference. And that putt on 12 was huge, which
it was huge.
Set him up for 13.
Interesting that he went to the mental locker room and said, okay, you know, US Open, I've been here before. Have I learned the lessons of that? Have I learned the lessons that really affected him? And he spoke about this in the aftermath of his final round of the win. He said, look, that really affected me. And maybe I haven't been as open with you guys.
Yeah.
But that haunted him.
No doubt.
He had to go to that locker room again and say, all right, what have you got here, Shane? Yeah. What are we doing?
What happened at the US Open, and obviously I was there, and it was horrible to watch what happened over the last five holes, but it was fantastic to watch what happened over the first 63-ish holes, which was Shane in that zone, which we've seen Shane attain when he won the World Golf Championship event in Akron, Ohio in 2015. That back nine, people might remember the back nine in Akron, Ohio, birdie the 10th from the trees, birdie the 18th from the trees, and made this incredible up and down on the 14th, where it was just, he was in such trouble that he had to lay up and pitch from 80 yards to 20 feet, and he had to pitch to 20 feet because going at the pin, he couldn't have stopped the ball. It was really smart, and he just got it going. It just proved to me that when Shane is in the zone mentally, he is one of the best, potentially best players in a field in a major, because he likes tough competition. What happened at the US Open was it just unsettled him. The way that the whole back nine began to unravel, he didn't get off to a brilliant start, but he was okay. But the last five holes, he didn't really think that he was in contention, even though he was only one behind. He was actually level because of the penalty that Dustin Johnson suffered.
So it's purely mental.
It was purely mental. He was only one behind, but he didn't feel like he was going to win. And it's all about the feeling. You know that more.
I think when you have a four shot lead like that, going out and you lose it, you know, you feel you're way, even though you're only one back, it probably feels like you're four or five back. And that's, I just think he was a lot more aggressive in the final round coming down the stretch. Now, I know he was chasing, but he didn't seem, and he did learn his lesson. I mean, this is the whole thing. It's trying to get in the zone. You know, how do you get in the zone? Nobody really knows. Because if you knew, you'd be in it every week and you'd win 7 or 8 times a year. But that's the challenge for all these players. But to lose his full-time status on the PGA Tour, to come back, have a good end of season, but to come out in the first event, like a huge Rolex Series event.
And that field as well, Brooks Koepka, yeah. Dustin Johnson. Yeah. You know, this is not a weak field. No disrespect to the European Tour, but it's not a weak field, even, you know, by any standards.
48 world ranking points. You know, yeah, it was a bigger amount of world ranking points than there was for the Desert Classic on the PGA Tour. They hit it 42, so it was a stronger field than the event on in the PGA Tour coinciding with it. Just going back to the US Open, there's one thing you have to remember: Shane completed his third round. His third round, the morning of the final day. He had to get up, and he had gone to bed the previous night at about 11 and had to be up at about 5. He got a minimum or maximum 6 hours in bed, probably minimum 4 or 5 hours sleep. And then he had to hang around for 6 hours, not knowing whether to go to bed, to rest, or for 6 hours, knowing he had a 4-shot lead going into the final round. Yeah. And it was just not the way to prepare for a final round for anyone, especially a rookie in that situation, yeah, yeah. You know. So absolutely. There were a lot of reasons why the US Open didn't work out for him, unluckily, because they had the rain delays. So I think you have to put that in his locker as well. But look at the four events that Shane has now won. Irish Open, obviously, he would have won €500,000 if he could have picked up the check, but he was an amateur. He couldn't. It was a big event with a good field. Mm-hmm. The Portuguese Masters, a middle-ranking event on the European Tour, but certainly one of the better middle-ranking events in the European Tour. World Golf Championship and Rolex Series event in Abu Dhabi. When he wins good. He wins in good fields and often on tough courses. And this is why I think the way he won, losing the lead and then finding himself 4 behind, finding something special, covering the last 7 holes and 3 under, and that bullet of a 3-wood from 281 yards on the 18th to 30 feet. What a shot that was.
So look, just to go back into this, right? So Shane now knows that when he has to go deep into a locker room and try and find something, that he can do it, right? When the chips are down, when it doesn't seem like anything is happening for him. And it was a short space of time. In the space of an hour, he'd gone from, what was it, 3-shot lead to 4 behind. It's a massive swing. He's going to go qualify for the Masters now. He can play pretty much any tournament that he wants without having his PGA card, so to speak. But he's top 50 in the world, but gets into all the big tournaments.
He'll get PGA Tour event invites if
he wants to do it. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if he finds himself again in a position like that, he knows that it's there. And is that not the biggest thing that he can take from that?
Yeah, it is, because that's why the US Open loss, I reckon, and he's never told me this personally, but I'm just surmising that it would have taken a huge amount out of him. And you do lose that belief. And then it was totally compounded by the front nine. Even though he didn't do a whole lot wrong in the front nine, he really only hit one bad shot. And obviously Stirney...
But just watching Stirney go birdie, birdie, birdie.
But
his
body language is so much better. You know, when he hit that trough, his body language, to me, looking at him, he wasn't hard on himself. He wasn't getting that down.
Gary, how important was Bo on the bag? I mean, because I spoke to him on Saturday night and I asked him, having Bo in the bag, what was the difference? Because he actually said that I needed Bo to keep me in it. And I told him beforehand, there'll be times when I need you to talk to me. And Bo, obviously, you know Bo quite well, Brian Martin quite well.
There's no problem talking to anyone.
No, but he is that kind of character. He has that sort of intelligence to know when to say the right thing at the right time.
He does, and he's a very positive, upbeat character as well. But it's not positive in a patronising sense, because when you're down on the course and it's not going your way, someone being upbeat for the sake of it, it sounds
irritating.
Yeah, and you just want to knock him clean out. But I think he deserves a lot of credit. And it's a new relationship as well. There are only 9 tournaments into it. And to get a win of this magnitude is great for Shane going forward. You know, I don't want to talk about Ryder Cup because it's a long way off. And I think it's more important for him to focus on trying to back it up this week. Just stay in the moment every week. That's what Tiger Woods has done, but greater than anyone in the modern generation. Just be hungry to get in the mix somewhere on Sunday, and that's what he has to strive for. And just be more consistent, because we know, and he's proven, as Greg alluded to, those huge victories he's had. But just to have a more Not that he doesn't want it, because he does want it, because people, like, Shane's in the gym every day, at least once a day, if not twice.
He said he's done more work in the gym in the last month than he's ever done in
yeah,
pre-season.
And at times the TV is horrendous, because it puts on, you know, if guys are a certain shape, they just look a lot heavier than what they are.
That's our excuse, like, Gary. I actually look
overweight in TV. It's ridiculous.
I know. But, what the hell? How many cameras are actually on you?
But, you know, so he's like Darren Clark in a lot of ways.
Strong guy, big guy.
He's never going to be skinny, but works very hard on the right things. And you have to give Neil Manship, his coach, a huge amount of credit as well. It'd be so easy to change certain things with Shane, and they have not done that. It works. He just has to get a little more consistent.
Look, he's not a whole lot different to the shape that Colin Montgomery was in for most of the best of his career. And Shane, beneath,
nice, better shape.
You know, well, one of the things you can definitely say, Shane's a real athlete. He's very supple. He's a proper athlete. And if anybody says to me, just because he mightn't have the white belt, narrow 32-inch waist that Darren Clark once got down to amazingly.
It doesn't
mean anything at the age that Shane is at, but it might mean something in 10 years' time. But at the age he's at now, you know, he's fit enough for what he needs to do. But this is the other thing, that when Monty lost weight and went on a program, he got out of sync with his swing and couldn't find what it was that gave him that beautiful rhythm. And what does Shane have? A beautiful rhythm. Mm-hmm. He was being compared by Ewan Murray on Sky to Christy O'Connor Sr. I think it was Christy that he was being compared to. And there's an awful lot of that fluidity. It's an old-fashioned action that he has, almost old-fashioned.
Lovely to watch.
Well, it's lovely to watch. Do you know the funny thing is, for a big guy, he actually doesn't hit it as far as I thought. He was out hit by 20 yards by Richard Sterney.
Sterney's long, though.
He is long. Compact.
He's got all those muscles he's got.
He's long enough. His length is fine. He's
a 300-yard hitter. He's in that sort of range.
And a little bit. But when you have a short game, like, he has mother.
What about that 3-wood into 18? Do you know what it reminded me of? A Mr. P. Harrington.
His five-wood in Birkdale.
Not quite the same club, but similar kind of pressure,
I actually think the drive was a much better shot.
He'd
hit no fairways. He's so tight down.
Because he had to hit that fairway.
But it's easy, just sneak it a little bit into the rough, and it's a bit of a layup. Sterney's maybe in the fairway. He's on the green. You're laying up. So to have the honour and put that in the fairway, hit that little peel off fade he hit, was a fantastic shot. Now, the 3-wood is amazing too, but the drive set it all.
Yeah, credit to the 2-putt from 20 yards on 16, wriggling in a 5-footer, and the up and down on 17, where he was short-sighted and had no shot and hold the putt from 12 feet.
He
backed it all up with the way he played 18. He did what he had to do when he needed to do it, and he showed real grit.
He's great, Larry. He's box office. I mean, he's so relatable. He really is.
He is.
And he's a, you know, he's been around a long time. He's won a lot of money, and like, I remember when he first came out on tour after he won the Irish Open. And he's very similar. Like, he hasn't changed at all. He's got a new set of teeth and a beard. But, you know, he's very grounded. And
he's great.
I think that's credit to his mom and dad, to be honest.
Absolutely. Okay, just a couple other stories then. Adam Long. I mean, like, this is... talk about a wing and a prayer and a dream come true. This guy... handful of appearances on the PGA Tour, and I mean literally
six.
A handful
six.
So a handful if you're a witch. Right, and he goes out and he takes down one of the all time greats at the weekend and wins from Phil Mickelson. I mean, this is just fairy tale stuff.
Great. Yeah, I got so bored watching the burnt out dormant grass wide open ballpark golf course event. But yeah, look, you know, world number 417 wins in a 6 PGA Tour start, it's a dream come true when you beat Phil Mickelson, you birdie the final hole from 14 feet, all of those things. Might be remembered that Graham McDowell won in his fourth start on the European Tour and his sixth start as a professional two challenge tour, you know, so, you know, it has been done. It'll be done. For Phil Mickelson won a PGA Tour event as an amateur. Yeah. So, you know, talent is something which will always win if you've got it. And he used, 26 under par when he won? So
I have to say,
but it was a soulless event to watch.
Greg, I watched the highlights of it back again. I had seen bits of it, while Phil Mickelson, whatever like that. And soulless is right. So you have guys just bombing it down. Phil Mickelson hitting like flop shot wedge, like lob wedges into the greens for most of the par fours and getting within 10 and just knocking the putt in. There's nothing to this. What? They're destroying the game with golf courses like that over there. And if that's the PGA Tour now, which it is, it's a bomber's paradise with no creativity, no kind of cause for invention or shot making. It's just how far can you hit it? Who can hold a putt? Is that really what you want?
Well, no. this week in San Diego will be a bomber's paradise, but it'll be different.
Different, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be serious rough. They're going to have a problem this week. Why do you think Phil Mickelson is missing? You know,
he doesn't like memories of Paris. First time he's ever taken that. And he's a decent record around
He has, yeah.
But Tiger's back, so that's all that matters on the PGA.
It's a great field for San Diego. Fantastic field. Ram, Day, Rose, Rory.
Fantastic.
Xander.
Good old Xander. Schauffele, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He won that opening tournament, didn't he? The final round, 61 or 2, was it? 62?
Yeah,
course record.
62, yeah. 61? 60 par.
One of the two, anyway.
61.
Hugh says Shane finished the year well. He had form coming in. You could see in his body language when he dropped shots it didn't bother him. He's a serious backroom team there with Neil and Robbie. Bo has put the cream on it. Thanks for that, Hugh. Willie says, lads, he's just a gem. Yeah, he is, and he's so popular as a result. Somebody who's not so popular is Matt Kuchar, and I want to come back to the story. We briefly discussed it myself, Greg and I, last week, and Gary, and I want to get your thoughts on this because Brandel Chambly has been writing about it. To make a long story short, Matt Kuchar went to Mexico, played in a PGA Tour event, won over $1 million, hired a local caddy, and a story appeared a couple of weeks ago that suggested that he paid him $3,000 for winning the event, not the 10% that normally comes with a winning golfer if you're a caddy. At the time he was asked about it by a golf journalist, he said it's not a story, but refused to say how much he did actually pay the caddy in question. Now it turns out it's closer to $5,000, when the caddy could have been paid his 10% bonus, which would be over 100 grand and change his life. Brandon Chambly is sticking up for Matt Kuchar, saying, look, he does a lot of stuff for charity, and this guy, they agreed the fee beforehand.
not in Mexico, though.
No, they agreed the fee beforehand, and you know what? Relative to most Mexicans, this guy had a pretty good payday. What's your own view on this, Gary?
Oh, it's appalling. The biggest check, it wasn't the best finish I ever had on tour, but the biggest check I ever had on tour, I gave my caddy 10%, and I wasn't in the top three, so I don't understand it. I was always probably not over generous, but I respected the role that the caddy played in me having a good week and doing well. A lot of the times when they say nothing, they say everything, and to have what, 45 million in career money, you can easily stick another minimum 20 on top of that. To hand a guy $5,000 is just, it just goes to show why he's a prolific money earner and he's not
a major winner.
A major winner and a multiple winner, because he's a phenomenal golf game. But it's just like, it really beggars belief, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, we used to have it the whole time when we went down to play in South Africa. It was always a problem with the local caddies. There was always aggro, and I always paid them European tour wages, which was probably at the time.
You say a problem because players weren't paying them properly.
Like, you could get a local caddy down there for probably $300-400 for the week in wages plus percentage, and you just agree a price. But I just always pay them
the European going rate.
Yeah, because you're writing it off against your tax anyway, so it's not money that you're going to have in your pocket. It's left a sour taste.
No
story, because it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's wrong. And I'm surprised Brandel Chambly, because I enjoy a lot of his commentary. I think he's very knowledgeable. I just think this time, I think he's trying to sit on the other side of the fence for the sake.
I think so too, because his article made no sense to me. At the end of it was like, I want more evidence, but yet 90% of his article is based on no evidence whatsoever. It's his view on what he thinks happened and putting it into context that don't actually measure up at all. I mean, look, it's left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth. I just wanted to finish it off. We probably won't talk about it again, but because Brandel wrote the article, Greg, I thought it was worth it.
I think 5% would have been okay, because it was still going to have been 50 or 60 grand, and it would have been what you would pay a substitute caddy who comes in to do the job of your regular caddy.
You pay him full whack.
Even Tom Gillis, the guy who was the whistleblower on all this, accepted that 5% would have been an acceptable scenario. it's still a big paycheck, but the 10%. I'm not trying to deny anybody.
$5,000 out of an over $1 million paycheck is just
1.25.
It's scandalous. It's scandalous. I can't measure that.
It's like walking past a homeless person on the street and giving them a cent.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like,
why do it?
I'd rather if you hadn't given him the $5,000. Don't give him anything. If we're going to insult him that much, don't even give him any.
The only thing in this as well, I'm a bit unnerved about being trialed by social media again, which is a different argument in one respect, because of the fact that there is a core issue here which needs to be sort of outed.
Absolutely,
but outed this way, it's a reputation shredder for Matt Kuchar, and it's, you know,
it's a shredder.
And social media has done that in cases where, you know, it's resulted in people's reputation not being rehabilitated.
Like Castaño and Simon Dyson.
Oh, wow. Simon Dyson, what was the thing? The new rules, whatever. One of the golfers said, I can't get this into my head. I'm able to tap down things. You know, Simon Dyson's been doing it for 20 years. Anyway, look, that's another conversation. We're out of time, guys, as we always are. Pleasure. Greg, Gary, thanks a million. Andrew O'Connor produced tonight, and we are back tomorrow. Stay tuned. Louise is on the way after these.
Let's go.
This is 2FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop skin irritation. Revolutionary technology taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Gillette, the best a man can get.